Thank you. I talk very loud, so I don't think I need to use the microphone. Can everybody hear me okay? Great. So what I want to talk about is what is happening really over the eastern one-third of North America across the eastern deciduous forest biome, and how we're having a biodiversity collapse that is unrelated to climate change, but climate change is going to make it worse. So let me get started. So this is essentially the eastern deciduous forest. It goes up into Canada, and I just so you have an idea of where we're talking. I'm going to tone in on the area. I teach at the University of Pittsburgh, which is right here, and so I'm going to talk a little bit about Pennsylvania and what's happening there. But my research will take you from way up here on Lake Superior, on privately held land, and it will cover aspects of Pennsylvania and West Virginia, which is the geographic center of the biome. So this is what's been happening over the last 100 years in the eastern United States. So we are losing tree species one by one. These tree species at one time were the dominant species in the biome. And disease, pathogens, and insects are currently today removing these tree species one by one. First, we lost American chestnut. We also have oaks. Oak species are one of the dominant taxa. They produce very large seeds that are important for wildlife. And oaks are not regenerating well anywhere in the eastern United States. We've had the increase of an Acer species, Acer rubrum, red maple, has, for reasons that aren't completely clear, is increasing in abundance across the biome, especially in the north. So we've had loss of adult American beech. So one of our preeminent dominant tree species is being killed by an introduced fungus and an introduced scale insect. Loss of ash species. Currently, I was in Pennsylvania when the emerald ash borer, a beetle that was introduced from Asia in an area near Chicago, the beetle came out, it attacked ash species in its native habitat, and when it came from Asia and was introduced into the US, we're getting 100% mortality of three different ash species. The US Department of Agriculture believes that we will lose 14 billion adult ash, and we've probably lost 5 to 6 billion already. And a loss of hemlock. So again, one of our dominant primary old-growth tree species, highly shade-tolerant, it's being killed by an introduced insect called the hemlock woolly adelgid. So just to show you a little bit, this is beech bark disease. It's a fatal disease. It started way up in New England, has spread across northeastern North America, and will continue to spread, killing anywhere from 70 to 95% of adult beech. This is the hemlock woolly adelgid that kills hemlock, and it's actually the small individuals, the juveniles, are more vulnerable to the disease than the adults, but it is slowly marching across eastern North America, causing nearly 100% mortality. This is the distribution now of that disease as it moves through the eastern United States. This is the emerald ash borer, this small beetle. It makes these canals, these galleries, again, causing 100% mortality. This is the distribution of where the emerald ash borer has been found, and it was only introduced 20 years ago and is spread just in 20 years. It's killing billions of adult ash trees. This is the chestnut blight. That started in about 1917. That is a human being standing there. This was a really high quality wood, and now there are almost no adults of American chestnut left in the United States. So, and this is the distribution of chestnut, and that disease has now spread across the range. So we've been taking tree species out of the eastern deciduous forest biome one by one for the last 120 years. We're worried it's gonna be Armageddon if something comes in that gets maples, the genus Acer. So if something gets Acer saccharum or Acer rubrum, it will be catastrophic, and we're worried that some introduced pathogen or insect will begin to attack our native maple species. But this has happened in the United States. I don't know here, and everybody, how many people, I know what Smokey the Bear is. Anybody know? I know Smokey Bear. Okay, and if you're in the U.S., every little kid knows about Smokey Bear. So the United States Forest Service, to protect its forest from fire, introduced a little tiny bear. We're supposed to save the forest by stamping out all fires. Fires were a natural part of our ecosystems, and by putting them out, by suppressing them, we've been doing that for a century. That's been harmful to our forests. We've had increases in deer browsing regimes. So just like red deer here cause problems, white-tailed deer are super abundant across most of the biome. And that's because hunters want to have deer at very high levels. They want to be able to go out into their forest, see a deer like you would see on the property here, and then be able, you don't have to travel far to get your trophy buck. Alteration of canopy gap regimes. We clear cut, we logged 99% of the eastern forest. There's almost no old growth or primary forest left in the eastern US. So now we suppress fire, we have way too many deer, and we clear cut basically the entire forest. So we changed everything about how our forests function in the eastern US. So this is kind of this is the area of old growth forest in the eastern deciduous forest biome, 1620, 1990, gone. Now, that doesn't mean we don't have forest there. We do, but it's all secondary forest. It's forest less than 120 years old. So our primary forests are gone. So here's the current situation in the eastern United States. We have huge land areas that were once farmed or were logged, and they've been abandoned. And now they've come back as forest, but they're young forest, less than 120 years old. Two examples. In upstate New York, in the northeast part of the United States, about 20% of the area of New York was under forest, closed canopy forest. Now, 70% of the area of New York is covered by closed canopy forest, about 80 years old. The same is true in Pennsylvania. So we have forests covering the eastern US, but remember, we have diseases and insects removing tree species one by one, and all these forests are young. So essentially, the eastern United States is dominated by vast hectares of young second and third growth forests. So this is the idea, things in an old growth forest, this sort of cartoon or schematic. We have very large canopy gaps. We have a lot of these standing dead trees. We have lots of coarse woody debris. And as a result, in an old growth forest, a lot of light can get into the understory because you have these large canopy gaps. In young forest, they cast deep shade. There's very little coarse woody debris on the ground, these fallen logs, and we have very few holes in the canopy. So these forests cast deep shade. Deep shade makes it difficult for regeneration in the understory. So, what I'm gonna do is take you to Pennsylvania, which is about 1/6 the size of France. It's in the eastern United States. And I'm going to find, what I found was 19 small remnants of very old primary forest. And each of these locations or names is the location of one of these old forests. And usually they were all less than about 2,000 hectares. Some of them were about 16 to 20 hectares in size. I'm gonna go, and all this was all across Pennsylvania. And I'm gonna test this hypothesis, that these old growth remnant stands will show patterns of canopy species replacement. What that means, if I go into the forest and I sample the small saplings, and the mid-sized trees, the mid-sized saplings, that if they will then grow up to replace the species, the tree species that are in the canopy. If in fact I have an understory that's species poor, then that means the future canopy will have fewer tree species in it than it does now. So again, as I told you, I'm going to go to 19 remnant old growth stands. Each one of these is one of those 19. And I'm gonna ask a very simple question.
If we dissect or break up the canopy into three layers, the high canopy, the sub-canopy or the mid-story, and then the seedling or understory layer, and then I project into the future, what will the future canopy look like? And the key assumption here is that the understory and sub-canopy will reflect the composition of the future canopy in the absence of a major disturbance like a tornado of a windstorm. And these are the sites that I already showed you. And now I'm going to give you some data that at first will seem overwhelming. There's 19 stands here. Here they are, all here. Each one of these graphs represent the 19 stands. But there's one key take-home message. In every single case, this is the canopy, this is the sub-canopy, and that's the understory. So we go from up into the canopy, into the mid-story, into the seedling and small sapling layer. And as you can see, with one exception, that is the exception, every single time, in 18 of the 19 stands, we had lower diversity in our understory than in our canopy. So in these primary old growth forests, the future of the forest is going to be one with about half the tree species in the canopy. So our forests are becoming lower diversity and homogenized. This is the 12 stands that had a lot of oak, quercus, in the canopy. And so I'm only going to focus on these 12. And you can see, here's the canopy. This is the percent of species that are represented by oak on the y-axis. And this is the canopy, the sub-canopy, and the understory. In all of these 12 cases, oak species, which are critically important to our forests, are not regenerated. And this has been happening not just in Pennsylvania, but throughout the eastern United States. So other things that were happening in those forests, a whole bunch of other hardwood species like ash, black cherry, prunus, magnolias, also were not regenerated. We didn't find small individuals in the understory, even though we had many of these species in the overstory. We had a lot of beech and hemlock in the understory, two of our shade-tolerant tree species. And similar patterns have been reported since really the 1970s for stands all across the eastern United States. So the question we want to ask is why? Why is it that we have species-rich overstories, but our understories are are depauperate, or have low species diversity? And if we project into the future, we think our canopy trees, our canopy layer, will also have low species diversity. So I'm going to ask these questions. I'm going to do a long-term, large-scale factorial experiment because I want to know why. Why is it that our understories are species poor? So what ecological processes are potentially responsible for these changes in species composition and diversity loss? And does one process drive these patterns, or do more than one processes interact to do this? And now I'm going to set up a long-term experiment in the understory in West Virginia, which is the geographic center of the biome. So I'm going to propose three general models or hypotheses to explain the loss of diversity in our understories. And the first is what I'm going to call the shade tolerance model. And that model proposes that forest change over time is driven by how shade tolerant tree species are in the understory. So I'm then going to propose the mammalian browsing model. It doesn't matter whether you are shade tolerant. What matters is you can withstand heavy browsing. If you can't withstand heavy browsing by deer, you are removed from the understory. It's the primary filter. And the third is the fire tolerance model. What happens when we stop having fires in our understory? Well, if that happens, then the only species that we'll have in the understory are those species that are fire intolerant. They can't handle a fire in the understory. Remember, in the eastern United States, fires aren't the big crown or canopy fires that you see out in California or the western part of the U.S. These are understory fires. They cause almost no mortality of large trees. So this is the shade tolerance model. as we have big holes in the canopy, so you get a very large disturbance that removes canopy trees, that increases light in the understory. So as disturbance severity in the canopy increases, the abundance of shade intolerant species will increase. It assumes that light is the most limiting resource in the understory, and that the differences in species shade tolerance cause forests to change over time. So things like hemlock and beech are highly shade tolerant. They can withstand deep shade. And species like birch and cherry, prunus, those species are high light demanding. And it assumes there is a trade-off. Species can be fast growing and shade intolerant on this side, and as we go in this direction, they become shade tolerant. And all species can be divvied up and placed along this axis. You either grow fast at high light, or you can survive low light. And this work was actually that demonstrated this trade-off. This is low light survivorship on the x-axis here. On the y-axis is just an axis of how fast do you grow. And you can't do both well. If you survive low light, like hemlock, sugar maple, acer, beech, fagus, if you survive low light, it's impossible for you to grow fast at high light. This is a well-known trade-off. You can't do both well. So that means that disturbances in the canopy will determine how fast you get forest change in the understory. So, and we can divvy up our species into shade tolerance categories. Sugar maple, American beech, and hemlock are shade tolerant. Some species are intermediate in their degree that can tolerate low light. And then we have fast growing shade intolerant species, our poplars, our birches, and some of the cherries. So now we have deer are evil, right? So it's clear driving around here, deer are evil, right? So what happens now when we have lots of browsers, 3 to 6 times higher than historical levels? Remember, Native Americans hunted deer extensively, right? We had mountain lions and wolves that were hunting deer, keeping their populations in check. Those things are gone now. So deer across the eastern United States are very abundant. And now we're going to test a different model. It's not that you need to be shade tolerant to withstand low light. Now you better be tolerant of browsers. If you get eaten over and over again, can you withstand repeated browsing? So now it's a trade-off between browse tolerant and growth. Right? If you're highly browse tolerant, you can't grow fast because you're allocating resources to defense. So, or if you don't allocate resources to defense, then you're vulnerable to browsers. It assumes that nobody cares whether there's a big disturbance in the canopy that allows light into the understory. The only thing that matters now is, can you survive repeated browsing? So here it assumes that browsers like white-tailed deer have a major impact on species composition over the past and today. So, and this is just anything that's not green, this is sort of the distribution. If you're in this light green, orange, or red, that means you have too many deer in your habitat. And across much of North America, the eastern part, deer have been overabundant. So the mammalian browsing model, over-browsing leads to an understory composed of browse-tolerant species present in the seeds and seedlings and saplings. Deer prevent browse-intolerant species from regenerating and causes their local extinction. And browse tolerance may interact with shade tolerance so that shade tolerance is confounded with browse tolerance. You can go out into the understory, you see a species there, and you say, wow, that species can survive deep shade. Well, that's not it. That species can survive being overbrowsed by white-tailed deer, and that's a key difference. So, and it assumes, again, all species can be divvied up. You are either tolerant to browsing or you're poisonous, and deer don't eat you, Or on the other side, deer love you. And everybody knows here probably what do red deer like to eat. And you go, oh, that's one of their favorites, and it's gone from the understory. The same thing is true in the eastern U.S. So now we're going to get to fire. We've suppressed fires for the last 120 years in the eastern U.S., and 100 years ago, fires were common in our understory. So we're going to deal with the fire tolerance model. Now, fires increase the absolute and relative abundance of fire-tolerant species and decrease the abundance of those species that cannot tolerate fire. And again, we can do the same thing. We can divvy up all species to being fire-tolerant. A fire comes through the understory, it may cause you some harm, but you can resprout after the fire. Over here are fire intolerant species. A fire comes through and it removes you from the understory. So that is Smokey the Bear right there, just so you know. So this is the symbol, so all Americans should do their patriotic duty by going out and making sure fires do not harm our forest. But the Smokey the Bear campaign has in fact harmed our forest. So fire eternity, this is an understory fire. It goes through the understory and it won't kill species that are large. So those fires came through every 7 to 75 years throughout the eastern U.S. We started fire suppression efforts pretty much. The United States Forest Service was founded to control wildfire. And it was founded in 1905 and its mission was to stamp out fires. And they created in 1944 their Smokey Bear campaign to get Americans to stamp out fires. So, for example, in the state that I live in, Pennsylvania, there's been a decrease in fire by 99% from 1908 to 1989. So the fires, which are a natural disturbance regime in our forest, gone. So, fire tolerance model. Natural and anthropogenic fires, it's clear that Native Americans used fire as a management tool. They knew if they burned, it would clear out areas so they could see enemies coming, and it would also promote species that they wanted, like oaks and hickories. Reoccurring fires should promote fire-tolerant species. Fire-tolerant species have all these adaptations to fire. Thick bark, for example, protect you from a fire. And numerous species of oaks and hickories are considered fire tolerant. Remember, oaks aren't regenerating across our forest, and there are many, many species of oak. It's a species-rich genus. But few of those are regenerating well. So now I'm going to set up an experiment over the long term that's going to test my three hypotheses. Is it the degree that you're shade tolerant? Is it the degree that you're browse tolerant, or is it the degree that you're fire tolerant? And I'm going to do that in West Virginia, which is the geographic center of the eastern United States, of the forest biome I'm studying. So these are going to be complex to some degree, but I'm going to coach you through this graph. One thing that's nice, just keep your eye on colors. If there's lots of colors, this is the canopy here. Each color represents a different tree species. So if I have many colors, I have many tree species. So here's the canopy here. So the species way up at the very top, the adults, many colors. However, if I go in and I look at the saplings and the smaller size classes, notice I go from many colors to essentially two. That is true across the eastern U.S. We can go to forest after forest after forest, and we get canopies that are species rich and understories that are not. What will happen in 100 years if we don't change that? So now I'm going to set up this experiment. So I went down to West Virginia, I went to two sites, and I set up an experiment where I basically flipped a coin, and areas about 100 hectares, I flipped a coin and randomly chose one side to get an understory fire that my team and I set, and the other half, no fire. I have a control. I then went out with chainsaws. Do you guys chainsaws in French? So just so you know. So I went with chainsaws with my team, and we cut very large canopy gaps. We would cut out with chainsaws 8 to 12 trees. And then we built fences to fence out deer. So here I have no fire, here's my control. No fire, no fence, and no canopy gap. Here I have a canopy gap and I have a fence. Over here I have fire, I have fence, and I have canopy gap. And then I can use moderately sophisticated statistical techniques to parse out what's causing our understories to be losing tree species. And then I'm gonna measure a lot of things. So I've now mapped and measured greater than 100,000 trees over the last 15 years or so, longer. Because we started this in 1997. Now we're at 21 years or something. So we measured a lot of things. Again, these are going to be complex because I have 8 treatment combinations. But all you have to do, here's the control. Notice I have a canopy that has lots of colors, lots of tree species. I have an understory that has essentially two tree species. They're going to be American beech and sugar maple, Fagus and Acer. So what I'm going to do is now put these over here. I call this, by the way, do you guys know Walt Disney Bambi? Right? So we call this in the United States the Bambi syndrome. We have Bambi everywhere. So here we have no Bambi here, and here we have white-tailed deer Bambi is present. Here we have where we went out with chainsaws, we cut big canopy gaps here and here. And here we have fire on top and no fire on the bottom. And what you want to keep an eye out for is here in the small size classes. So this is canopy, sapling layers, large saplings, medium saplings, small saplings, and these are seedlings. What you want to look for, can I put, in less than 10 years, can I put colors back here? If I can put colors here on the smaller size classes, that means I can regenerate a healthy forest in 10 years by getting rid of Bambi, by putting fire back on the landscape, and cutting huge canopy gaps. So let's see what we were able to do. So this is the canopy. So we have the canopy, the big trees, many colors. Now I'm going to do this. Wow, good luck with that. But I will coach you through this. Notice, first of all, I was able to put colors back into the small size classes. So my manipulations, fire and canopy gaps and excluding deer, I was able to get colors back on the landscape, meaning I could now regenerate by manipulating these three factors. I can regenerate a healthy forest. I'm going to take you here. All right? So notice, this is no fire. I did not burn. I cut a big canopy gap, and I got rid of deer. Voila, less than 10 years, I have beautiful colors. So what it means is when we reduce deer and we put natural disturbances back on the landscape, we don't get this any longer. We get healthy forest regeneration, and we know why. But I've lied to you now, because what I'm gonna tell you is this. This makes it look like, wow, all of these factors are interacting together. They're not. In the next slide, this is relative abundance. Notice this is percent here. So that means that species is about 20% of the individuals in the understory. But there's one process that was critical here. And I want you to think, in your mind, I want you to say, which one was it? You have 4 options. I think fire was the most important. Yes, no. I think deer were the most important. Yes, no. Or I think light from these canopy gaps was the most important. Or were all 3 of these factors, processes, equally important? So usually I take a poll in the audience and say, well, everyone think, which is it? Is it deer? Is it fire? Is it canopy gap? Or all 3? Because you may think, well, it could be all 3, but this is relative abundance. Now I'm going to show you which one was the most important. So this is now absolute abundance, not relative abundance. So this is the stems per hectare, and here are the 8 treatments. My control, no deer, gap no deer, fire no deer, fire gap no deer. All right, someone shout out.